We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Just like the Pelicans almost ended up with R.J. Barrett, you could almost be R.J. Barrett. How? Indochino Custom Menswear. That pink suit he wore to the draft? Yep, Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more. And everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Plus, you get to personalize all the details, including your lapel, lining, and your own monogram. Indochino's process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or do it all yourself online at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering BlueWire at checkout. Plus, shipping's free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BlueWire, for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. Incredible deal made for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit.
The New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson.
And Holiday with a triple penetration. So tough going to the goal.
High up on the rim to rip it down.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. This podcast is brought to you by Indochino, Harry's, and your favorite, Roman. We have some great ad sponsors ahead of you, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast and our network. Mason, what a do. How you doing?
Good, man. It's been a little bit, but I think we were hoping to have a few more wins at this point. Than I think the last time we talked was after opening night. We're still not looking too hot overall. The last game is promising, but hopefully good things, better things to come.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows with this team? So the issues of this team have been really well documented. The last time we talked, the Pelicans were 0-4, I believe. They were 0-4 something, and they hadn't won their game yet. And they've won two games since then, but they have embarrassingly lost several games as well, particularly one at home to the Raptors where Pascal Siakam went off for 44 points. The effort, the energy, everything was just embarrassing. And it led to a pretty eventful night on Twitter where you had your regular Fire Gentry crowd out and clamoring for Alvin's job. And here's the thing. I think that people are right to want to criticize leadership. I just think they do it in a really stupid way, in ways that just don't make any sense. And
yes.
You know, if you're a grown-ass man and you need to run up and down the court and you need a coach to tell you to not turn the ball over, to not step out of bounds, to go defend your man in transition, then you don't got to be in the NBA. You don't need a coach to motivate you.
That's go just, read Andrew Smith's piece if you haven't yet, because he hits on all of it.
Yes, Andrew Smith wrote a tremendous piece on this. In any case, the Pelicans got blown out at home by the Raptors, and they were able to regroup, though. They were able to regroup by going into Charlotte, winning on the road. The game was tied with basically 5 minutes left. They entered the fourth down 91-86. I believe they were down five or something like that. They ended up winning by five. This is the first time they've gone into the fourth and out-executed a team, which isn't saying much because the Pelicans executed really this game. They had 27 turnovers, I believe. It was not very good, and Charlotte was almost as bad. But the Pelicans were 0 for 5 in clutch situations before this time, and this time they eked out a win. Did you think that anything they showed this game is something they can sustain going forwards?
I don't know, man. Like, we're still talking about such small sample sizes here that I have trouble projecting anything forward. I like the fact that these guys, they didn't you tweeted about it. Don't bow down, and they finally took that to heart and got it through a win. The Hornets, I know they're 4-4, but they're worse than their record. But also, it's a road game, and road games are tough to win in the NBA, no matter who you're playing. And so, especially being on the second night of a back to back, there was clearly some desperation there. I like the, rather than just taking anything out of a specific part of a quarter, because I think that's a little random. Some of the things I liked were it did feel like they got JJ Redick involved in a way that he can really benefit from, which kind of has been hit or miss throughout the year. And I think you and I both, you were on this train first. You're usually the one on the train first, and then I hop on later when I realize you're right, is Kenrich Williams. And they finally got him some made him a mainstay in the rotation, which I feel like you were first on the start Kenrich train. I was always on the he needs to be a regular part of the rotation train. I was kind of bummed when Gentry took him out of it because he gives this team exactly what they've been sucking at, which is rebounding and defense. So it was just always a little peculiar to me that he didn't really – that he was in and out of the rotation. But I'm really glad he seems to have a grasp on some real minutes now.
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to sound completely ridiculous.
Please do. Go for it.
And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to hate me for this. But bear with me. I think it comes from a good place.
I'm so excited.
I think inserting Kenrich Williams into the starting lineup gives you a lot of what Lonzo Ball gives you, just without the positional moniker of point guard. Hear me out. I think because Lonzo Ball is quote-unquote the point guard, there's a certain expectation on him to orchestrate the offense, to get players involved, to take pressure off of Drew. Jesus. In half
court. What did I do?
Oh my God. Oh no, we're not going there. To take pressure off of Drew in half court situations, the Pelicans desperately want him getting into the paint, going to the rim and creating. And this is not just me on my soapbox after every game discussing his driving. It's not. This is something the coaching staff actually wants, and it's something that they voiced. He is still learning how to operate in the paint, and I don't think it's a finished product. It's going to be a long season. The Pelicans have time to deal with him, so they're going to figure it out. But right now, the player Lonzo Ball is, he's a defensive player who can rebound the ball and play make for others, and has largely been an off-the-ball, spot-up, three-point shooter if he's not taking step-back threes on his own. And his statistical profile is very similar to of a utility wing player, which is the role Kenrich is filling. But inserting Kenrich into the starting lineup and him not having the title of point guard allows Drew and Ingram to fall into the roles that they're best at, which are attacking perimeter players who like going to the basket. And Drew, he had 11 assists last night. I think that is a season high, creating for others, and allows JJ to be JJ because Kenrich also does those big man things that you really need a big man to do, which is set screens, do dribble handoffs, roll to the rim, defend bigger players. So he's slid into this role that is kind of, obviously it's too early to tell, but I think that night specifically brought that starting lineup together because previously it was just a mismatch of players and you're like, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. Pelicans weren't able to find shots for JJ because they weren't running dribble handoffs, but also, as I mentioned earlier, Drew and Lonzo just weren't good at finding shots for JJ. Mm-hmm. They were able to find shots from JJ in large part because he was working in concert with Kenrich. They ran a couple pin downs with JJ and Kenrich on the corner, JJ coming off a screen that Kenrich was setting and freeing up. And again, it's just having this versatile utility player that can do just about everything and isn't expected to score and isn't really expected to have creation abilities. Mm-hmm. He's a connector like Lonzo Ball is. Lonzo Ball is several tiers above him as a connector in terms of playmaking. But in terms of understanding what their natural roles are, the Pelicans have an understanding of what Kenrich Williams is and what he's expected to do. And I think that brought that lineup together. And Faves looking healthy also helped, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, that was actually where I was going to go next. I feel like I shouldn't gloss over the statement you just made because the way you explain it is makes a lot of sense. I'm very curious to see if they make any changes to the lineup for tomorrow night. And I feel like maybe we wanted to wait to talk about future games, but does the lineup you threw out there against the Charlotte Hornets work against the Houston Rockets? And so I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I do want to go back to Favors for a bit because the fact that he played on back-to-back nights and played big minutes, well, big-ish minutes, but he played 29 minutes last night and looked pretty good. He's really helping him on the glass on both ends of the floor. And I think you mentioned a point in the game where he's playmaking a little bit too, which is really nice to get out of your five. So he's filling a nice role. I think it's been a little touch and go given his health thus far. And I think a lot of people were wondering if this team has a real five. And I think it's going to become pretty clear over the next few games that they do. And so that was really nice to see.
Yeah. Faves was really solid, which is what the Pelicans have needed from him. And you touched on the playmaking where Charlotte was essentially playing defense the way the Pelicans have been playing, where they come out high on the guard, try to contain that, and it kind of leaves the big open momentarily. And Drew was hitting that short roll with Favors every single time. And credit to Faves was he was making the right pass every single time without any hesitation. It didn't take him long to process the floor, to see where the help came from, to see who the open person was, sling the pass there, and it led to open threes on both accounts that I saw in that moment. And I think Charlotte kind of went away from that for a little bit. But he hit, I think, JJ in the corner for a three, and then he hit Kenrich in the corner, who swung it out to Brandon Ingram as the Charlotte player was rotating, and Brandon Ingram hit a three. And so that's super important for the Pelicans, as well as the defense and the rebounding. I think going
and as bad into, as yeah, as, yeah. No, as bad as the Hornets are, the roster looks for the Hornets. Their front court defense, they don't have bad defenders, and so it's not like Favors were just doing this against nobodies. You know, I feel like that's something where you just equate one team to being bad in all phases, and I just don't think that element of the Hornets is particularly bad, and he still did a good job.
No, absolutely not. I think, yeah, I agree. I think I talked about this earlier where I would love to steal Cody Zeller off of that team. I think he's a type of big that every team could use. A hard rim roller, a tremendous defender, a good rebounder, and a really good screen setter. He was definitely causing problems for the Pelicans with his athleticism on both ends, but And the Pelicans pulled it out. Going back to what you said about the Houston game, though, and changing the starting lineup, the only change I would potentially make is to sub JJ for Josh Hart. But
same thing. I was going to say the same thing, man. Right there with you.
But you kind of want to ride this hot game from JJ and see if you can continue this. I think you could probably put Drew and BI on Harden and Westbrook, see what happens from there, and kind of put JJ on House. I don't even know who they're starting at small forward. But I think it's been House.
House and Tucker.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker might eat you alive on the glass, but from a offensive perspective, if JJ does his job, Tucker's mostly going to be standing in the corner.
Yeah. I struggle with wanting to give both of those guys. Like, I know Drew's going to take on one of those guys, but I would also like to not have to rely on Ingram to be – not to say that he's going to do a terrible job, but just because I want him to be able to focus on getting buckets and not having to deal with one of those two guys. And that's – so, but I do get – your point is fair on JJ. I just feel like he's such a vet that he's not going to need to – he doesn't – need to be in the starting lineup again to maintain consistency. Now, if you're talking about quality of looks that the Pelicans can get for him, that's another story entirely. Humans have been shaving for thousands of years. Well, except for former Pelican Nico Mirotic. Kind of a more recent development for him. But the secret to a great shave, it hasn't changed much. The ancient Greeks didn't need flex balls or heated handles, neither do you. That's why Harry's doesn't overcharge you to add gimmicky features to their razors. They focus on delivering what actually matters. Sharp, durable blades at a fair price. I've used Harry's myself, and I can tell you that never before has shaving been more convenient, comfortable, and cost-effective. Harry's is a return to the essential. Quality, durable blades at a fair price. Just $2 per blade. They've cut out the middleman, which means you get incredibly high-quality blades at a factory direct price. Harry's is super convenient. Blade refills are delivered directly to your door on your schedule, with or without a subscription. And there's no risk to you for trying them out. If you don't love your shave, let them know, and they'll give you a full refund. Listeners of this show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to start shaving better today.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is easy. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with the doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/BlueWire for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/BlueWire.
Are you seeing any progress from the rookies, Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jackson Hayes?
I mean, so Nikhil, it's obviously been tough sledding for him. And it's not like he's had easy matchups. I mean, I feel like, especially last night, I was talking about how much I was looking forward to him going up against Graham, just because Graham's been so good so far this year for the Hornets.
He's really good. I don't know where he came from, but he got really good.
He will take Rozier's starting spot in a month. Unless Michael Jordan is yelling at his coaching staff to keep him in the starting lineup. To tank, which actually not a bad strategy, but Graham's been phenomenal, and so I mean, Nas had some tough matchups, but I think he's getting better every game, but it's not like, I mean, he's still very much a rookie. I think
He had 5 turnovers last game in 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's not good. not great, Bob. And I mean, if we're going to talk about rookies, we got to extend that to not just Jackson and Nall. We got to talk about Melly too, because dude, that dude was minus 11 in 5 minutes against the Hornets. And I know that's almost random in terms of the sample size there. It's pretty much entirely random, but he's underwhelming overall this season too. And I know it's kind of like how we talked about Nico is inconsistent minutes for this kind of guy who is going to try to rely on his 3-point shooting. It's not exactly an easy thing for any player to deal with, being, you know, having their rotations so as inconsistent as they are, but I really thought we'd get a little bit more from him. He had 3 turnovers in 5 minutes. Him and Nah, 8 turnovers in 14 minutes combined for those two.
Absurd. Brandon Ingram had 7 himself. It was just a really bad game from a turnover perspective. Now, yeah, I think Nikhil, you see flashes, right? You see it's like, okay, this move is something he was doing earlier in the season, getting blocked in, but this time he took his time. But then you see it's just some boneheaded things. You're like, why would you try to make that pass? Why? So I still think Nikhil has a strong future in the league. Yeah. I think what has been the most consistent thing about Nikhil Alexander-Walker is that man is not afraid to drive the basketball. He's had definitely. That's the second thing. But he's had mixed results in terms of driving the basketball. But I like the aggression, and I think as he learns the game, it's going to improve, because I always look at driving stats after every single game, and he usually has like 6 drives in like 4 minutes. His per 36 drives are probably among the highest in the league. Yeah. So we'll see how he ends up being. With Jax, I'm just glad that he's getting minutes, because I think it's important to his development. I think he looked so lost during his first 4 or 5 games, and I think he's improving. He still has a tremendous way to go in terms of defense, but you can kind of see with him, as you saw with AD, the offense is probably ahead of the defense at this point of the stage, where he has a really good sense of when to roll, and just being absurdly athletic and big as he is, he gets very easy looks. And I think it applies a pressure on the defense in a way that Faves and Melly and Okafor just haven't been able to apply. His catch radius draws a lot of attention and makes drives and pick and rolls easier on the ball handler. I think I saw a couple of pick and rolls with him and Brandon Ingram, and Brandon Ingram got like layups out of them just because Charlotte had to account for Hayes' tough rolls. And then if he didn't get a layup, he got all the way to the rim and had an easy pocket pass to Hayes for a dunk or a layup.
Yeah, and like even, I mean, so you mentioned that he's totally lost in space when it comes to the defensive end. But, I mean, if you're trying to figure out who to give minutes to between him and Okafor, and I vehemently disagree with this a month ago. But, I mean, I think I overestimated Okafor's ability to not be a defensive liability at kind of within the flow of the defense, as opposed to just saying, oh yeah, he can guard in the post. He can protect the rim well enough, not great, but not be able to, not be just a total sieve there. But he's been just like, and this is, you've talked about it. Prada wrote something pretty good on it for SB Nation in the past week. But he's just been, and this applies to all their defensive bigs, except for Favors, who hasn't really played that much. They're just getting torched when they're outside of the paint and they're having to defend in space. And so if Hayes and Okafor are kind of awash in that respect, then why not give Jackson some burn here? I don't see the downside until you can point to me that, or show me that there's a real material difference between the minutes between him and Okafor, because I don't know if I see it right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think Okafor has had his moments. He had a really good game against Denver where he just absolutely ate up Jokic.
Yep. And, there are matchups, yeah.
Right, there are matchups. And I think Okafor is still very much a viable NBA player whose role should be from a bench perspective and to score off of the bench. And I think the Pelicans can definitely utilize that player in certain matchups, and they'll figure out how to use him. But you're right. I think Jackson getting these minutes where he's been averaging 16 minutes a game ever since he started actually playing games, which is really big. I didn't expect them to get 16 minutes a game. I expected them to get DNPs and then 4 minutes a game. But he got 3 DNPs to start the season off, and ever since then, it's been 16 minutes a game. And, yeah, small sample size. Be damned, Jackson Hayes has a positive net rating, so I don't care. He's the GOAT. Start him.
I was going to his fouls per 36 are 7.9.
Okay, we're good.
High, but
not bad.
But he only had 2 against the Hornets in 18 minutes, so he's getting better.
Yeah, his per 36 stat line minus the fouls looks a lot like AD rookie year per 36 stat line. It's 16.5 points a game, 8.2 rebounds, 1.9 assists, 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks. And maybe, actually, no, I'm off base here. I was remembering wrong. AD was a much better rebounder. Yeah, AD's a much better rebounder. Yeah, whatever. Jackson Hayes, athletic man, go dunk some balls. Good for you. So here's a question. What have been your thoughts on Frank Jackson so far?
Better than I was expecting going into the season. But again, man, it's like he's I feel like he's been a monster from the corner. He's been I feel like most of my memories of Frank Jackson this season so far are him hitting corner threes, which maybe that's inaccurate, but that's just kind of feel like what I've seen.
He is shooting 50% on corners, and 40% of his threes are from the corner.
Okay. So reasonable. So I don't know. I feel like he has carved out kind of a decent role in backcourt, but I also feel like he's been playing in a lot of three guard sets, which is almost a little bit unfair on the defensive side of the ball. So I don't really have a strong opinion of him on the defensive end, just because I feel like he's been a victim of circumstance and the fact that he's not really playing much of the starters. He's playing with guys like Redick and Naw in the backcourt, and that three-man group as a defensive unit is going to just be horrible. But I feel like he's filled a good role on offense. They haven't asked him to do too much, and he's generally been pretty good, minus the frustration point that he and I both had when he just kind of died on those screens. And I know you're going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I do have an opinion of him on the defensive end, and, you know, I got called out for criticizing him. And one of the comments that Griff had for Frank was that he's a tremendous on-ball defender, and they've been playing him as such. They've been putting him on the best perimeter guys from the bench and whoever's on the floor at that time. He's supposed to lead the charge at the point of attack. I think the reality is that he's been god-awful at it.
All right.
I think he just cannot navigate screens. I think he gets lost really easily, and he still isn't big enough to provide much resistance if a player gets going downhill. I think, again, he is a victim of circumstances where the lineups in general are really bad, so he doesn't have much help on the backside. But I don't see him as a defender. I really don't. I don't think he is a positive defender yet. I don't think he provides much resistance at the point of attack. Do I think he's better than J.J. Redick? Yes. Do I think that the Pelicans are kind of using him based off of his reputation that they've built? Yes. I don't think he's actually effective in that regard. And maybe Griff is going to call me and change my mind. But that's just how I see it right now. I don't think he's a positive defender. What I do think is that he's a necessary shot maker for the Pelicans. And he's another player that isn't scared to drive the basketball. For the minutes that he gets and the role that he has, which I don't think his handles are fully there yet, that will allow him to consistently attack the basket and create for others. He still gets going downhill pretty frequently, which is good to see, because good opportunities come from that type of aggression. And I think he's going to continue to improve as an offensive player. That being said, the man has recorded 9 rebounds total in 9 games.
Yikes.
What? How? He's recorded 9 rebounds.
That's Andrew Wiggins level.
Yeah. 14 assists to 15 turnovers. And, yeah, his steals and blocks are nothing to write home about. So, like, again, my criticism of what does he do beyond score the ball, I feel like is a very valid criticism. And I think he's another player that's probably going to benefit from a presence like Zion coming back, because the Pelicans need off-ball players.
I thought you were going to say a change of scenery.
No. I mean, sure, if he gets more minutes. But I think the idea the Pelicans should have is to try to grow him into a replacement for J.J. Redick. It's never going to be the same because J.J. Redick is one of the best three-point shooters of all time. But what I mean by replacement is someone that steps into that role of, I'm going to run like crazy around the perimeter and make a bunch of off-ball shots. But plus, he's able to do a little more things going forward towards attacking the rim and be less of a defensive liability.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
beyond being a shooter, a jump shooter, or a shot maker, I don't think the Pelicans should reasonably expect him to start magically contributing in multiple areas of the game.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, if he's not going to step up in other ways that, you know, the team may or may not expect him to, then he's going to have to really make the things he does do well the reason for the team to keep relying on him and for your reason for him to stick. And so which would be exactly what you just said. It's just making opposing defenders' lives hell and just running around and getting open looks, moving off the ball and getting open shots. So we'll see. I didn't have quite as damning of an assessment as you on the defensive end, but I think that's more of a function of I didn't really buy what Griff was selling in the first place. As not to say he's a bad defender by any stretch. My perspective was that he's fine. And he's still young and so he's maybe not necessarily going to be that good already. But I wasn't holding him to a super high standard, but it sounds like you're very entrenched on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think with what the Pelicans are putting on the floor and what they're trying to be, I'm just calling it like I see it. And I will say that this is a problem that's not unique to Frank. I think just about every Pelicans perimeter player has been really bad at the point of attack. People talk about like, oh, we have all these good on-ball defenders because they're athletic and rangy and whatever. They just haven't been good. Drew's been okay to good. He hasn't been first-team all-defense Drew. I don't think he has. Lonzo's been invisible in my eyes. I think he's been good at the team defense aspect of the game. I think he makes reads on opposing sets really well to generate turnovers and rebound the ball, those sorts of things. I think on the ball, he's been largely invisible. I think Ingram gets screened really easily and is slow to rotate. I think he's still a negative defender at this point, but I will clarify that with I think the effort is there, and I think that him taking on a bigger offensive usage is hurting how much of that effort he can actually expand on the defensive end. So it'll be interesting to see what he turns into when Zion is back, because he still is rebounding at a career rate, and he's generating turnovers in terms of blocks and steals at a career high rate. So Ingram is improving. I still think he has a long way to go, and part of that might be just getting stronger overall. But pretty much every Pelicans perimeter player has been really bad, and the bigs have been bad too. So it's just led to the bad defense all around. Hopefully they can grow from what they did in Charlotte. It'll be difficult to see it immediately happen against a team like Houston.
Yeah, even though they had a good game, not that that's sustainable. They did play pretty well against the Rockets last time out. And that was without Drew, right? That was one of the games that he didn't play?
Right, I believe so. Yeah. I So here's what I'll ask you to close the podcast. We're talking about sustainability. I'm looking at Brandon Ingram. I'm seeing, I think he has played out of his mind. And a lot of what he looks like he's doing doesn't look like it's unsustainable until you start seeing the percentages. Yep. So I'm going to ask you a couple things, and we're going to close on that note. Ingram is shooting 46.9% from three-point land. I feel like we all agree that that portion isn't sustainable. I'm pretty pleased by the volume of attempts that he's taking, so that's fine. I think the answer to that one is pretty obvious. So mm-hmm. My question is, once that shot starts falling a little less, do you think, one, his volume of attempts goes down? Well, let's start with that one. Do you think his volume of attempts goes down? Do you think he starts taking less threes as he starts making less of them?
No, I think it'll have more of a function of how many shots Zion gets when he comes back, which I think maybe is unfair answer to your question because I think that goes without saying. But generally speaking, I think he'll keep at it. I mean, they've clearly told him that they want him to keep shooting. And even if, the thing is, even if he drops down, to 38%, that's still an open shot you want him taking every single time, without fail. So I think hopefully it's gotten entrenched and has had enough from Gentry and the coaching staff to just fire away if that shot's open.
Okay. No, I hope so too. I think his volume's already dropped off a little bit from what it was in the beginning of the year, but he's also just been killing it from mid-range and not really had to pull the trigger from three as often. Now, that brings me to my next point. He is shooting 51% from 3 to 10 feet, so in the paint, and he's shooting 61% from 10 to 16 feet, like the short mid-range area.
Yep.
How much
would probably be the best number of all time if he sustained that, I would guess.
Probably. So, yeah, how much of that is sustainable, and how do you think he changes his game to attacking the rim more or pulling more threes as those mid-range shots if they start falling off?
So that's where he makes the all-star team in my mind, is if that happens. So because it's going to fall off. It just is. I mean, Kawhi Leonard makes like half those shots, and he's one of the best at it in the league, if not the best. So those numbers are going to fall, even if it falls, but like below 50%, it probably will. If he can start getting a little bit deeper into the paint and turning some of those shots, and not to say they're bad shots, but he has the ability. He's proven it. He based on his shot profile with the Lakers. I mean, he wasn't taking any threes there, but he was getting to the rim a decent amount. And so if he can do that and get his free throw rate up some, I think that gets him to the All-Star game. I think it really does with the way he's playing on offense right now. So that's my hope. I guess we'll see if it plays out that way.
I hope so too. I think he's really in this rhythm, and I hope he can keep that number above 50%, because that would be absolutely absurd of a shooting season for any player from mid-range and in those territories. And I think it will, him being that big of a threat, which I think people have already established that he's a threat from that range, really opens up his game on so many levels, because he gets those guys on those pump fakes and he gets to the free throw line. And I think it opens up the Pelicans game to have someone that can score from those spots of the floor, because right now they don't. That's typically been Drew's job, and he's just not been good offensively in any sense. Now, what I am a little bit concerned is his free throw shooting is just fallen off from the clip that he was shooting it at in like preseason and the beginning.
Percentages or how much is getting there?
No, percentages. Percentages. It's fallen off. It's dropped down to 72%. It was in the 80s all throughout preseason and the beginning of the season. And I wonder again if that's a function of the usage that he's getting and his legs and he's getting tired and the season's going on, or if that's just him regressing to the mean as a free throw shooter. Because after the first two games, he has been 68% from the line. So if you take the first two games out where he didn't miss a free throw, he's been 68% from the line.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know. I
that's
think
his career rate.
Yeah, he's at Yeah, his career rate's making two out of every three free throws. So, I mean, I think I would be surprised to see. Like, you rarely see a huge jump from year to year in that stat. It's like, it's just, I mean, if he can take baby steps every year, that would be great. Like, I feel like one of the only times I've seen that is a guy like Tyson Chandler. I remember that vividly. Like, he was a trash free throw shooter with New Orleans, and all of a sudden he became good one year. And so, and that, I mean, I think that's been holding true for some of the other big men like Drummond and Capella. Like, they're still bad, but they've taken big steps year over year at some point. I don't think that happens for guys like Ingram. So I expect it to regress to the mean. Hope if he can get above, if he can sustain above 70% like he did last year, maybe get, or not last year, he's never been there, but if he can stay above 70%, get close to 75 this year, that'd be a big win for me.
Yeah, I think 75 should be the number to aim for, particularly at the rate he's been getting to the line. Okay, I have no more questions for you, Mr. Mason. I am hoping the Pelicans continue to build off their defense and they walk away with a W.
Yeah, we got a tough schedule this week, so I'm not sure if we're going to be much happier after we play the Rockets, the Clippers, and at Miami. And Miami's been better than expected, I think. So,
well, I'll tell you this. It's November, and we're going to start turning this into draft podcast. So stay tuned, and our next podcast will be about Cole Anthony and Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Maxey. Yeah.
The whole Ball family.
The whole Ball family, LaMelo Ball, who might actually be the version of Lonzo that the Pels have been looking for all along. Stay tuned for my call.
For the ones who know that a little late is always too late, and that the clock doesn't stop just because you're missing a part, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, and our KeepStock inventory management solutions help ensure you have the right stuff in the right place at exactly the right time. Visit Grainger.com/KeepStock to learn more. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.